Good morning, folks, and welcome to We the People, Constitution Matters, heard right here on 1180 AM WFYL. I'm Bruce Stocking.
I'm Corinne Lillis.
And today we're going to be joined by Gary Porter, as always, Chuck Proctor, who's in studio with us. Sam Rohr will be with us in our first half hour of the program. Then we'll be joined by David Whitney. And today's topics are going to be, well, part two of the separation of church and state. And then as the program goes on, we're going to revisit again the legislating from the bench topic that we've been dealing with off and on. But on a constitutional legal front, if you've been watching the news yesterday, of course, Attorney General Eric Holder announced that he will be stepping down as the Attorney General of the United States of America, a call which I've heard more people say it's too late, should have been done a lot sooner. But we'll be following that story even more, how it goes on, who will be in the selection process of replacing him. As you know, with the Senate and Harry Reid just adapting and changing the rules of the Senate, they have a majority of 51 of the members vote to clear any nomination for the president coming in. The president's going to have to act fast to get another one in there before the November midterms happen, which there is a very good possibility that they will be losing control of the Senate. And if that happens, it'll be an interesting game, let's say, all the way around. So we'll keep an eye on that. But Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, is stepping down. The announcement made yesterday in the White House itself. So, as I said, we'll be watching it on this program and also on our New Day program, which can be heard right here at 1180 AM, WFYL, from Tuesday to Thursday. And we run that show from 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock. So,
yeah, and a quick plug on Tuesday for It's a New Day, we're doing our education roundtable from 7 to 9. So it's going to be great stuff talking about Common Core and other important education issues.
Yes. Yes, and something that I think is totally illegal is I've caught myself a head cold. So I may sound a little bit nasal than normal, but I'm back with you. The Constitution goes on despite a cold or not. So, but on the phone right now is Gary Porter. Gary, how are you this morning?
Good morning, everyone. I'm just fine. Back from Hawaii.
We managed to
survive Hawaii.
Yeah, I can see that was tough duty out there. It must have been really tough to pull yourself away.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yes, indeed. And Chuck, you're back with us. You were out in the West yourself.
Yes, I was out in Nevada at a religious liberty conference, the first in that state. And quite interesting, about 150 to 200 people, attorneys, priests and pastors and rabbis, all interested in First Amendment and religious freedom issues.
Excellent. And, of course, also on the phone with us is Sam Rohr. And, Sam, you're calling us all the way from Washington, D.C., are you not?
We, you know, isn't it great by radio we can be everywhere in the world and talking at the same time? But yes, I'm down here. I'm down here for the Family Research Council's Voters Value Summit, which is a rather good event, a lot of coverage and a lot of good issues. And so we're down here for the day and most of tomorrow.
That sounds outstanding. Well, you know, it goes with the old adage where people think they surround us. Actually, today I think we surround them. We're everywhere. But, Gary, I want to start with you. You know, we're still talking the separation of church and state. This is part two of the separation of church and state, so I'll let you lead off the discussion.
Well, last week we talked a little bit about the wall of separation that the Supreme Court enacted as their doctrine based on Everson versus Board of Education in 1947. And my essay this week in the newspaper pointed out that that wasn't really the first time that the Supreme Court had made mention of Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists. They also had mentioned it in an 1878 case, Reynolds versus United States, and in that case, they hadn't come up with this impregnable wall concept that Justice Black did in 1947. They basically said that the the rightful purposes of civil government are for its officers to only interfere with religion when religious principles break out into overt acts against peace and good order. In other words, the state should stay out of church affairs unless those church affairs are prejudicial to good to peace and good order.
Well, that also, Gary, doesn't that also fall into line with the First Amendment itself, the freedom of speech, which is fine and dandy, but it doesn't give you the freedom to yell fire in a movie theater.
Well, true. That goes right with that concept. But the problem with this wall metaphor, number one, in how it was discovered in a private letter of Jefferson to a group of Baptists, that's a problem in itself. But number two, it doesn't correspond with how the founders viewed the interaction between religion and government in the positive sense. They didn't want a state religion. They didn't want a national religion to be declared, even though all the states, most of them, certainly 9 of the 13, had official sanctioned religions. They didn't want anything like that at the national level. But then there's the other direction of interference or interaction, if you will. They recognized that there had to be an effect of religion on government for government to persist and to survive. And without that effect of religion and morality on government, that government would definitely degenerate. And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, exactly. And Sam, you've spoken many times on this topic about God being in the government, being part of the foundation of the government. If you could give some thoughts in on what Gary just said.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. I think Gary set it up very, very well, and that is the sense that the wall, as he said, as was said, was impenetrable. The wall clearly never, ever, ever in any intent by any of the founders or representative in any of the state constitutions or the federal constitution comes even close to saying anything of that type. Matter of fact, the states are very, very strong. Now, I'm just looking at the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania Constitution. Again, I go here just because now I'm from Pennsylvania, and that's where this program's coming from. But it was where William Penn established the whole issue of religious freedom, and which has become so important and really goes to the heart of this discussion. But you cannot have a wall that separates and throws God out without having an introduction like this. We, the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, grateful to Almighty God for the blessings of civil and religious liberty, and humbly invoking his guidance in the future, do ordain and establish this Constitution, and then establishes the religious freedom component in Section 3, which I could read, but then the fourth one then goes much further and says this: no person who acknowledges the being of a God and a future state of rewards and punishments shall, on account of his religious sentiments, be disqualified to hold any office or place of trust or profit in this commonwealth. There's very, very clear through everything that is written that the separation of God from government, which is really what those who try to hammer on this separation of church and state and force the forcible removal of the posting of Ten Commandments and prayer from school and all these types of things, totally inconsistent on any stretch of the imagination. And I think even our founders, I'll conclude with this, our founding fathers very, very much understood as well that you cannot separate God from government, because that's the only reason that we're here as a nation, one. Number two, but they did understand very clear distinctions in jurisdictions. In fact, there is a distinction in jurisdictions between the institutions of authority, meaning the church and the state and the family. There are clear distinctions. And the government is not to step into the church, and the church is not to step into the role of carrying the sword of civil government, and the government is not to step into the family and tell the family what they can or cannot do with the raising of children, education, so forth. So there's a clear distinction. I think part of our discussion ought to be in the clarifying of that distinction, which is there, but it's not a wall of separation as the folks from Freedom From Religion Foundation would suggest.
Right, and I agree fully with you, Sam, and it sounds very similar to two neighbors that are very close friends to one another, but each neighbor does not get involved in the family matters of the other neighbor, but mm-hmm. yet they work together. And mm-hmm. so what I look at on this and what I'm thinking is this is wordsmithing, this is twisting, and Chuck, you're an attorney. You know all about how they do that type of thing. And I tend to look at what Gary was pointing out in his article, and also what we're talking about here, is that they're basing it off of a private letter between Jefferson and the Baptists. And it's quite literally such as if you had NSA reading your tweets and your emails and using that to set law. Am I right on that?
Well, absolutely, Bruce. And I think that Gary and Sam have set me up, given me a softball here, because, boom, I can hit this one right out of the park, so to speak. But and maybe you covered this last week. If you look back at what was happening when our forefathers came over from Europe, for example, in England, the church had established the Church of England. And if you were not a member of the Church of England, you were subject to persecution in various forms and in various degrees. And same thing in other countries. And our forefathers were escaping that. They were coming over here so that they could exercise religion as they saw fit. And as Sam can tell us, and Gary, I'm sure, is very familiar with it, in Pennsylvania in particular, our state house, starting with the rotunda and working its way all the way through the entire building and in the Supreme Court of the United States, religious symbols of the Ten Commandments and pictures of Moses and Abraham and other leaders or depictions are made. And this is not something that we did in the last 10 years. This is from 200 years ago. And the wordsmithing that has gone on has gotten to the point where we're parsing language on a regular basis, Bruce. Mm-hmm. We're doing it whether it's separation of church and state, it's whether you're a for-profit or a non-profit corporation, all this parsing. And the bottom line is, and I made this argument recently in federal district court, where do we get to the point where, well, gee, the First, the Fifth, and the Tenth Amendments apply to Bruce, and the Second and the Fourth and the Eighth apply to Chuck, and the...
Well, it's funny, Chuck, that you bring that up, because I have not seen any story on this, but I got a little whiff of something that Dianne Feinstein was trying to put through as a bill, that the First Amendment should only apply to educated people. And this garbage exists out there.
I have a question. So, Sam, you brought this up earlier. You kind of said, you know, you said that one thing about the Constitution. Now it's pretty clear. I forget what quote you said, but or the very beginning of it, and it is clear, I think. So I don't. What's confusing to me is how a group like the Freedom From Religion group can get away with saying all this stuff. Well, it violates the Constitution. It violates that. I know it's a twisting of words, like you all have mentioned, but I just don't understand. Where is that person? Like, whose job is it to say, no, it actually doesn't violate the Constitution? It's pretty clear in the Constitution, this is what our rights are, this is what it says. So how has this been able to get away with it? Whose job is it to say, no, actually, you are allowed to do that because it says you have that right in the Constitution?
Well, I'll jump on that one.
Go ahead.
The groups you mentioned, I have sensed that the present administration is on their side, and they have been emboldened by that. The Obama administration has gone overboard to try to remove from public view any vestiges of the Christian religion, and particularly in the military, where they have obviously a direct influence. What's going on in the military to de-Christianize the military is absolutely abhorrent, and it would be abhorrent to any of the founders.
Sam, your thoughts. Go with it.
And I do have a thought on that. You know, that is a very, very good question, because we struggled under that. Anybody who's in office struggles under that when here it is. The legislature passes laws, duly passed, properly in every respect, signed by a governor, and then federal court, and we talked about this before, federal judges step in and overturn things that are laws that are passed by the people in the constitutional amendment or passed by the legislatures and signed by the governor, and yet they stand. It's the same issue right here. Who are they? What is this that can happen? And I believe that what has taken place is that here again, the understanding the jurisdictions of the different branches, legislative, executive, and judicial, is that the concept of law and what the concept and the purpose of the judiciary is in ruling on this, these kinds of things, have been subverted. So that we are now looking to the court as being the determiner of what is true, or false, rather than, separating and distinguishing, divisions or questions about the law itself. They're actually making the law, which takes us back to earlier discussions that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
The failure to deal with that by the legislature, by Congress on the national level, and allowing that kind of action to stand, I believe, has almost entrenched this kind of mentality in a way that it will be, in fact, very difficult to overturn these kinds of things because it's been allowed to happen for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Sam, you're exactly right with that, and it does get into that topic which we're going to revisit again, which is the legislating from the bench. But, to bring it back home for the common man and woman out there to understand what we're talking about here. And, gentlemen, I'm going to just throw this morsel out there to be chewed on. Is we're talking about word semantics here and how they've been interpreted and twisted. And as we always say with this program, is that the Constitution means exactly what it says. There's no little hidden encoding book that came with that, unless you, Gary pointed out, go in to get hired to be our representative in Congress, and then they give you another edition of the Constitution that almost looks like the Health Care Act. But, it's the twisting of the words to one's liking, and the fact that Jefferson, in a private letter, made a mention of separation of church and state, in my mind, and Chuck, jump in on this one, is no basis for setting a law, an opinion, in ruling from the bench. So therefore, our judiciary is failing.
Well, Bruce, as we mentioned before, or we were talking about before the show started, a lot of what happens from the bench is very subtle. And some of it appears to have the flavor of law. I'll give you an example. Our rules of civil and criminal procedure. We have in the Constitution, for example, the right to a speedy trial. It doesn't say 180 days to bring you to trial. By legislation, we have established that. Mm-hmm. However, with the rules of criminal procedure, you can extend a trial, as we've seen in criminal cases, for years and years and years. Now, what have they done? First of all, we had a law that established a time frame, and now the judges who establish and they write and they enforce these rules of procedure have allowed that time frame to be extended for any one of a number of reasons. It could be, yes, the attorney's busy or somebody's sick or what have you, but they can go on forever. And I could cite many examples, that one being the most familiar to our listeners. But the point is, that type of subtle and continuous erosion of the Constitution through not even a regulation, but a rule that the court has come up with themselves, affects us every day. And as a result, we keep getting further and further away from the Constitution, and we keep giving more and more power to not only the judiciary, but even some of our executive branch, who are not doing the job that they were supposed to do under the Constitution.
Well, not to step off the railroad track that we're going down with this program and this topic on that, but Chuck, when you were talking, I literally was thinking one of the root problems myself with the judiciary system and things such as the ruling of church and state and the nonsense that goes along with the separation is the fact that in law schools, we're spending more time studying opinion, case law, than we are the constitutional law.
Well, absolutely. In fact, the president of Harvard University back in the 1800s instituted this formality or process of studying law by studying previous written cases, which we call precedent. And that's all that is studied for the most part. Now, there is a trend in the last 10 or 15 years or so to have more practical, hands-on type of classes where the students learn about the day-to-day type of things. But there is very little on the entire Constitution. There is very little discussion, as we're having here today. It's on cases, and the cases are basically what some judge in a court, it could be anywhere in the United States, it could be the Supreme Court, what have you, has previously decided. And this study of case law, the idea is to give you the principle, have you think about it, have you do critical thinking about it. It may sound great, but it takes us away, it's taking us more and more away from our traditions, our heritage, because the cases are pile one on top of another. And so a case that we might have read 100 years ago, you never even hear about today because there's a new case.
Yeah, Sam, go ahead, Corinne.
Do you think this was intentional, Chuck, or do you think it just kind of, I mean, I know you said the Harvard, that man from Harvard kind of instituted this, but do you think that, and I don't know, do you think this was, it just slowly happened over time and people didn't even really realize, and then they look back like, oh, it slowly was changing, or do you think there was kind of an intent from the beginning and people just kept along chipping away with it?
Well, Corinne, I think Gary might have some detailed information on this, but the fact that this president of Harvard Law School instituted this system and almost right away every other law school adopted it suggests to me that there's more to this than just, well, gee, I came up with a new idea, a new way to practice law. Gary, do you have any background on that? Because I don't want to throw in a conspiracy theory, but from what I've read, from what I know of it, this was well thought out before they started it.
Well, absolutely. Christopher Columbus Langdell is the person you're talking about, the dean of Harvard Law School, and his movement was a direct attempt to remove natural law and the effect of natural law from American jurisprudence. It was not a mistake. It was a purposeful act, and if you remove natural law and the concept of natural law, that's one step towards removing God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, who was the creator of natural law?
Right. Sam, on the state level, I know we're going to be losing you pretty soon, but on the state level, do you find the same with the elected legislative body, that they tend to look at the case law versus actually what the constitutional law is?
Well, there's no question about it, and a lot of that is driven by members of the legislature who themselves are attorneys, who act as if they know what's going on more than others, and frankly, when it comes to matters of specifics in law, other members who are not trained in that way don't have the ammunition to be able to argue to the kinds of detail we're talking here, and they often just defer and say, all right, I guess you guys are right. Well, I think what we've seen, though, in a broader sense, is that this has tended to follow a culture as we've moved from positions on moral truth to moral relativism, and this has gone all the way through, which has fundamentally been an attack on natural law, but it's been throwing out God, absolute truth, and of necessity the Constitution, because it is our highest fixed law, civil law. So all of these things have tended to move in tandem. Although there are people there who have wanted to displace this foundation from the beginning, because really it's the Constitution of the United States that really stands, I believe, in the way of world tyranny, and it has, and there have been people working to undermine it for a long time.
Yeah. Well, with that, we're going to have to take a break. We're going to go to a news break. And you are listening to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here at 1180 AM, WFYL, and we'll be back on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. And we are back from our break. You are listening to We the People, Constitution Matters on this Friday, September 26, 2014. And I'm Bruce Stocking.
I'm Corinne Lillis.
And we are talking today with Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Incorporated. And we had on the phone Sam Rohr, former state legislator, now President of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Network. And also is Chuck Proctor in studio with us, law firm of Proctor and Lindsay. And joining us in just a few minutes on the phone will be David Whitney, pastor and senior instructor of the Institute on the Constitution. And before the break, Gary, we were dabbling into a little bit deeper. We start with the separation of church and state, and of course these topics that we deal with, everything, it's a stitch work that you follow the thread. It's all connected. We get into legislating on the bench and so forth, but picking up on the topic, which is a little bit of both here, the legislating of the bench, using case law to interpret the misinterpretation of law, the fact that Thomas Jefferson, I know this is a big question, but Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to a group of Baptists defining the fact that we would not have a state-run religion, and things went crazy. So if you want to pick it up from there, we'll pick up on your lead.
Well, I'd like to address something that Corinne asked there. And she asked in the last segment, how did we get to this point? Did it happen overnight or by drips and drabs? And my view of this is that it all comes down to those first three words, we the people. We the people have abdicated our responsibility towards the Constitution. Mm-hmm. We have allowed the justices, and Charles Evans Hughes said it best when he said, we are under a Constitution, but the Constitution is what the judges say it is. Well, we bought into that lie, and that is not the view of the Constitution that Alexander Hamilton, for instance, puts out in the Federalist Papers. He makes it very clear that the document is ours, we the people, and we have the final say on what it means. So if the Supreme Court comes up with a ruling that we don't agree with, we, the people, should make that right, and we have the power to make that right. But we have abdicated that, and we have said, okay, well, we'll just go along with whatever the court says.
Yeah. And, you know, this is an amazing thing, and, of course, it falls into, again, what Madison, Jefferson, Hamilton, all those gentlemen who contributed and created into the documents of this country, they said, guard against ignorance. Guard against ignorance. That it will be the downfall of the republic. And yet that ignorance has just flown right in. And as you said, we've allowed the flim-flam men to come in, sell us a bill of goods. Oh, don't worry, they're the learned people, so they know what they're talking about. We can trust them, but in fact we cannot.
You know, Bruce, it's interesting. There's the traditional strict interpretation of the Constitution, or there's the Obama-led and, of course, other liberals' concept of the evolving, the living document that needs to grow and change, which is totally bunk. But the fact is, when I was in law school, when we were studying the 14th Amendment, what we did was we read the congressional debates, the actual record, the stenographic record of the debates, and what each of the congressmen and senators had to say about it, so that we got the background, we got the history of how they came about to pass that. That doesn't happen today. That doesn't happen. So as a result, you have this view that is put forward to our students, whatever college or university it is, as to what they should believe, and they accept it. I've actually had to take out my copy of the Constitution, which I have with me 24/7, and read the First Amendment to the students, to my students, and say to them, tell me where it says separation of church and state.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, and that's a challenge I have put out ever since we've been on the air with our programs, is I'd like somebody out there to show me where in the Declaration of Independence, where in the Articles of Confederation, where in the Constitution, where in the Bill of Rights is the separation of church and state. And on the phone with us right now is David Whitney, pastor and senior instructor of the Institute on the Constitution. And David, maybe you can help me out. Does it exist in these documents?
No, of course it does not exist. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of a sleight of hand that we need to understand is that they're using a phrase that really doesn't express what they mean. When they say separation of church and state, that's not what they're exactly talking about. They're actually talking about separation of God from government. And that's the argument we need to take them to. You say, somebody says, oh, separation of church and state. You say, excuse me, do you actually mean separation of God from government?
Oh, that's
God's
a very good
law
point.
And God's principles have nothing to do with government. And it's very easy to answer that question. Just go back to the Declaration of Independence,
mm-hmm.
where it's very clear. It's the laws of nature and of nature's God that are the foundation of everything that we built here in this country. And then you have to ask the question, well, what's meant by the laws of nature and nature's God?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not the Hobbesian view of that phrase that would be, you know, well, if it exists in nature and animals do this, then that's what human beings are supposed to do. No. They were clearly paraphrasing William Blackstone in that phrase, and William Blackstone said there's three forms of law. There's the laws of nature, which is what God has written on the hearts of every human being, like Romans 2:15 speaks of. So every human has a conscience, even if they squelch the conscience or sear the conscience, it's still there. And then the second form, Blackstone said, was revealed law, which you read Blackstone, it's extremely clear. It is the Holy Bible alone that is the revealed law. And then the third form of law, he said, was municipal law. That is what human beings put down on paper. And he added, and this is what our founders held to as the standard, human law, municipal law, is only valid if it completely comports and agrees with the first two standards. That's why they were saying in the Declaration of Independence, we can criticize the king, that is the municipal law that the king has put forward, because the municipal law of the king has violated the laws of nature and nature's God in these 28 specific ways. He's violated the laws of nature and nature's God, and therefore, after this long train of abuses and usurpations, we have an additional God-given right, and that is to either alter or abolish this government and to create a government that will protect our God-given rights. So it all comes back to the question of, well, where do your rights come from? You know, are you saying separation of God and government? And usually they'll say, well, yes, of course, you know, all religions, blah, 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 they'll go on. And then you say, well, wait a minute, then can you answer this question for me? Where do your rights come from?
Yeah.
And ultimately, if they're espousing this view, they're saying your rights come from the civil government, which is, again, why that change of phrase has taken place in our culture, where now we're talking about civil rights rather than God-given rights. We need to alter the argument and get back to the language of our founders.
Well,
civil rights are dangerous.
David, I think you hit it on the head. You know, it's... The way you've approached this is, I kind of put it like a naval warfare. We've been shooting artillery shells and hitting the bridge and hitting the deck, and you just fired a torpedo from your sub and hit a midship on this one. But, Corinne, you had a question.
Well, go ahead, Chuck.
Well, David, I was just going to comment that even an atheist or an agnostic has a belief system, and they use that belief system and they use our Constitution to attack other faiths, other faith-based religions. And that, even though they may not believe in our God, they may not have the same faith, obviously, as an atheist or an agnostic, they use the very tools that we created in the Constitution to attack us. And I
mm-hmm.
find that a very striking contrast in this whole situation. And they use that to try to suppress what they don't want to face, which namely is that separation of man from God.
So I'm wondering from all of you, whoever wants to jump in, what do you do about those people who do say, okay, I don't care if my rights don't, if I don't believe my rights come from God and my rights do come from the civil government, you know, we have to appeal to everyone. And, you know, everyone's all about changing the times and that we want modern, we want to keep moving forward. And in a sense, I feel like, in my opinion, I don't think we're moving forward. I think we're just making it worse. But, I mean, what do you do to those people? Well, how do you handle the people who say, oh, we have to appeal to everyone? Your rights just, it has to be equal rights, but it's not really equal. You know, you have to go for justice. Justice over equality.
The whole question of where does justice come from is the crux there, because what would the communists say? Justice is everybody has an equal size house, everybody has the same income, everybody drives the same car, everybody gets the same pay, no matter whether they work or don't work. Is that what you mean by justice? So again, we need to, I think the most effective tool is just to turn the questions back on the people who are asking us them. What's your standard of justice? Is it Karl Marx and that's the
yeah.
standard of justice,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
the social justice people would say? Or, you know, is it a Hobbesian view that says, really every man for himself, let's advocate anarchy. And indeed, there's a whole anarchist movement going on in our country and around the world where people say no government. So if we turn it back on them, we can see the argument is the system our founders created designed to preserve the rights, the God-given rights that are spelled out in God's law for every human being? Or would you prefer, oh, the Muslim system that says if you steal something, we're going to chop off your hand. If you get divorced, we chop off your head and so on. You're going to have some system of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that protects everyone's rights equally that our founders said is God's law. And
well,
God's law is protecting a Muslim as well as a Christian equally.
Absolutely. And David, you brought up a very good point there, is when we heard this nonsense of share the wealth. You know, you make more money than I do, so to balance it out, you need to give me some of your money, for I'm equally as yours. Yeah, and Chuck's reaching in his pocket right now. But, you know, I asked him earlier if I could hold his wallet. He laughed at me. But anyhow, but Gary, your thoughts on this one as well. I think David's hitting it right. I mean, he's got another torpedo that's just hitting right in the midship here, and this progressive ship is going down real fast in my eyes.
Well, yes, and David it did point to the crux of the matter is where are we headed? You got to make sure that people understand where we are headed, and I don't think people have the long view. They look at things day to day, and they don't see ultimately where this is headed. They don't look at the trend of what we have experienced in terms of church-state relations over the last. Well, over the last 6 years, certainly, of this administration, there's definitely a trend, and it is not in a good direction. So you've got to make people aware of where this is ultimately going to lead, and make sure and show them how that is not a comfortable position. I mean, that's not where we want to take this nation.
Gary, I'm going to jump in for a minute because I have a question for Corinne. We're talking about, and I think Bruce has used a very good analogy, is progressive ship, and now it's become the progressive ship of state moving forward. And Corinne talked about moving forward. She talked about where we're headed. And I'm just looking to her for her perspective in the upcoming generation. Where do you and your friends see this going? I know where you stand, Corinne, I think, but your friends, the people that you know, do they see this as inevitable, as something that we're going to have to accept because we have to make, quote-unquote, progress?
I don't think many people care that much about the Constitution in my generation. I wouldn't say everyone, absolutely not. I'm sure there's people who do, but for most people that I know that I've encountered, I can't tell you. I don't even know if I could count one time we had a conversation about the Constitution and all this and where it's headed, because it's just not, it's never brought up. It's not really brought up much in schools. So, I mean, nobody really has a discussion about it. So I don't even know if they're aware that it's headed for a downfall, because it's never even brought up in general. Well, so, you know, it's all about what's happening right now. And so, I don't know, they don't think it would affect them, I guess, if they did hear that things weren't going well. I don't think they would think it would affect them in this lifetime.
And I think that's a pretty solid answer, too, because, let's face it, if we can all think back when we were younger, I mean, that's thinking a long time ago for a lot of us, but think back when we were younger, that responsibility aspect that you start learning in the younger mm-hmm. age, but when you get married, have a family, have a home, and you get those responsibilities that kick in, then all of a sudden you start wakening up to the fact, because what's the first thing? Your wallet. Trying to earn an income for your family, trying to keep that income, and then you're being taxed to death. And then you're having other things thrown in. Then you find your way, working your way through to the Bible. And you'll also look at the Constitution as far as the law goes.
Mm-hmm.
Mildly looking. And I think that's when it starts happening, when that turnover comes in.
Yeah, I don't think my generation really understands the fact that we, the people, are responsible for, you know, upholding our rights and with the Constitution. I don't think they understand that, because I just don't think it's really been ingrained
right.
in
David,
most schools.
David, you had some thoughts.
One of the things that, before I go here, one of the things that might be interesting for your generation, Corinne, is to think about Social Security. They're going to pay an enormous amount of their earned income into a system that's not only broken, that the evidence is clear, is never going to pay them a penny back. So the transfers coming out of their pocket into the pocket of the boomer generation, my generation, and to ask them, do they think just in their own evaluation of their own mind that that is fair and just?
Mm-hmm.
They get a huge chunk of money taken out of all that they earn, paid to another group of people, and they get nothing back even though they get an empty promise.
Oh, I thought there for a second you were talking the Unaffordable Care Act. You know, I was just losing it here.
David, the
well,
other part
go,
of that.
But it's been a pleasure to be with you this morning.
All right,
God
David.
Bless.
Thanks
Thank
for calling
you.
In.
Just to follow up to what David said, it's not only Corinne and her generation paying into Social Security, but every employer matches that amount. So what you see, Corinne, on your pay stub is $10. The employers put in another $10. Now,
hey Chuck.
Yes, Gary.
That's not money coming from the employers. That's money coming from the employees.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's a good point. Very good point. Yes.
I realize that.
but I don't think young people realize that there's that tax. Every employer, I believe, the statistics I've heard are somewhere between 12 and 15% between Social Security, unemployment, workers' compensation, what have you. And although employers have a responsibility to their employees, nowhere is there any mandate for providing that, in addition to health care, long-term disability, life insurance, pension, 401k, I could go on and on, plus vacations, holidays, sick days, personal days. These are things that have been slowly added to the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
And when our Constitution was framed, that was the responsibility of each individual, not the government, not the employer.
Well, you know, and it falls in, and Gary, please jump in with this to get us right back to our separation of church and state discussion and legislating from the bench, it's clearly pointed out by the founders that it's, you know, this is a government by the consent of the people. The people are aware of their government because the government is there to serve them, protect them, and to establish those rights and liberties and freedoms that are granted to us. And we've let it go. I mean, with the religious aspect, we've let it go, which is, mm-hmm. Corinne brought it out, which I call them the American Terrorist Network of the Freedom From Religion Act, our organization out there. And the court's going right along with them.
There's a saying that says, you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, but that also presupposes that you have taken care to wet your fingertip and hold it up and sense which way the wind is blowing. The American people need to understand that the wind is blowing in one direction here. We are removing God from the public square, and there's an intentional effort to do that.
Well, gentlemen, just to bring it up, you know, and which some people are thinking, well, you know, God, he's this entity nobody really sees and knows, they talk about. So what's it matter?
Well, it matters a great deal if you're concerned about the future of the country, because the founders said there is an inexorable connection between the two. And if you remove one from the other, the government is going to fail.
Yes.
The government is going to fail. Let me say it again.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we're headed, so people need to understand that.
And I would hate to see us have to learn that the terribly hard way. I mean, that would just be terrible. So what can we do? Like, what, I don't know, what can we do?
Well,
to,
you know, Corinne, it comes down
well,
to the foundation.
What can we do to change
that?
Yeah,
it comes down to the foundation of the building. The building is based on God. He's our foundation. You chip that away, you remove that, the building will tumble and fall. So your
right.
question is very valid to both gentlemen here, Gary and Chuck. What can we do? And with the young folks out there, which is very hard to get them to relate to something unless they can... It's something that, you know, approaching their interest level. I find this with history is that if you can get them into the more tangible, they'll then understand it. How can we go about this, reestablishing and understanding that, you know, the freedom to practice your religion and what's being done is wrong to recognize? Your thoughts on this?
Mm-hmm. Bruce, in the news this week, there was an article about, I believe it was Texas. I could be wrong about that, but... a school initiated a curriculum that emphasized patriotism and the history and the founding of our country. and it created a huge uproar in this school district because there were parents that were all for it and said, let's do it, and other parents that say, no, we shouldn't do that. We need to be more, quote-unquote, objective and go with the current flow of historical thought. And it's created a big dichotomy. And yet, the same people that say, no, we shouldn't do this patriotic thing, they say, oh, we're Americans and we wave the American flag. Well, you can't wave the American flag. You cannot be a patriot unless you understand what that patriotism is, mm-hmm. where it came from, and what put it in place. And God blessed this country. He blessed the people that created it by letting this even happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there have been mistakes made. I'll be the first to admit that. But the fact of the matter is, we've become the most powerful, and I don't mean that in a military sense, but the most powerful, influential, creative, dynamic society in the history of the world. And the one thing that we need to do is to get back on our knees, get back into mm-hmm. church, and thank God for what he's given us, and ask him for some direction on how we can reach the young people, how we can reach mm-hmm. atheists, how we can reach agnostics, and help them understand what he created. And our founding fathers were instrumental, but who created it? Our God.
I absolutely agree with everything you just said, Chuck. And I think the most important thing that you said there, everyone says, oh, God bless America, God bless America. But you said God blessed America, because he already did. He already blessed America. So we can't just go on and change that as if, you know, we want him to come and bless this nation. He already blessed it. I think that's so important for people to understand. He already blessed it. So we can't change something that he's already blessed so specifically and carefully. And, you know what I mean? It's so important to understand that he already blessed America.
Yeah.
You know, we can't wish for something to God to come bless America. He already blessed America, so we have to make sure we hold true to that.
That's
and I agree
true.
With everything you said.
That's
Chuck.
True. And to bring it back to your initial question, Corinne, is with the young people on there. And Gary, how do you think the best avenue or approach to make the younger folks, the next generations that are going to be stepping up and leading this country, aware of these facts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a tough nut to crack, because we don't have any inroads in the public school system. The public school system is going to teach what it teaches, and you're not going to hear how God has blessed America and how it's important to continue to walk in a way that that continues to evoke his blessing. So we have to take it upon ourselves to mm-hmm. to reach out to young people through our churches, through our communities, and makes them aware that they're not learning in public school the correct story of God, of America's founding, and how important God was to that founding, and how important God remains to be in the future of our country. We're not going to continue to experience God's blessing, his continual blessing, unless we're really willing to acknowledge the blessing that has already taken place.
Yeah.
So you know, Gary, we have to be careful. We can't offend people. You
no,
know, that's
but
what, they
what
say.
We need it's to like do also is we talked about the schools and with the churches, the parents. It all begins with the parents
right.
is where it needs to start mm-hmm. with. Chuck, I'll give you the last word.
Well, Bruce, I think a lot of parents have abdicated their responsibility to their children, to the school system, to even the church they go to, and have not sat down at home with the Constitution or a civics book or a history book and discussed these things with their children. I know my wife and I have spent a lot of time with our boys, and we would regularly, in a fun way, we'd quiz them like, gee, you know, most legislatures in the United States are bicameral. There is one unicameral legislature in the United States, and they would know where it was. Now, that's a little trivia thing. It's no big deal. But the fact of the matter is, we would talk about these things. We would talk about who was the first president, who was Lincoln. Whereas I have talked to students who think that Abraham Lincoln was the first president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we would work with them. We'd make it fun, little quiz things. We'd be driving. We'd be going to Washington, D.C., or we'd be going to Harrisburg or wherever we'd be going. We'd talk about things like this mm-hmm. and make it part of our daily routine. So the parents have abdicated that. And whether it's because we're baby boomers, as David Whitney referred to, or whether it's because of our heritage from the 60s, it's gone away, and we've mm-hmm. got to get back to that. So reaching the young people, like Corinne said, I think starts with the parents, no matter what the age is.
Let me interject one thing here.
Real quick.
I encourage every parent to get out the 1828 Webster's Dictionary, yes. and it's available online, and look up the definition of education.
Yes.
Oh. Read that definition, and then see whether you're carrying out your responsibilities as parents.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect, and we'll have to end it right there. And the journey continues into the Constitution of the United States. We'll be back next Friday here on We the People, Constitution Matters, heard on 1180 AM, WFYL. Being that it's Friday, the weekend's coming up, weather's supposed to be nice. Get out there and enjoy it, and we'll see you right back here next Friday. And don't forget to tune in Tuesday to Thursday to listen to We the People, or listen to It's a New Day here on 1180 AM. And like I said, the constitutional journey continues. See you next week.